Scooby-Dooby-Doo, where are you? We have some work to do now. Scooby-Dooby-Doo, where are you?
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, the Reverend Dr. Death. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Law Urena. And this time, we are covering a... It's not really a scary movie at all. I mean, if you're scared by this, you have some problems. It's Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island from 1998. One of the, I believe, the first actual Scooby-Doo movie to feature real creatures.
Yeah.
That wasn't just people with, you know, guys in masks or women in masks trying to do nefarious things or whatever on the side.
Yeah, I would say that. Maybe it's not scary for us adults and people who have been desensitized by what we put ourselves through, but I would
maybe for kids,
yeah,
very young kids.
You remember things like this when you're a kid because you remember these are the things that introduced you to horror, and I have to imagine that somewhere these kids were holding on to hope that this was a joke somehow, and it was not a joke. Like these were real monsters, or this was a real situation, and they were like, their minds were changed forever after that.
They're like, oh my god, they really have monsters on Scooby-Doo now.
Yes, so, which is ironically, it's what the Scooby gang was looking for. It's what they got, so
Fuck around and find out.
Exactly.
The tagline, fittingly enough, is this time the monsters are real.
You know, what's the other tagline we said was one of the best ones so far this season? Do you remember? And we're like, what's going to top that?
Which one was it? Which movie was it for?
Was it 28 Days Later?
I was thinking it was 28 Days Later.
No. 28 days, and then there's 28 weeks later. But I think it was 28 days, and I forgot what it was.
While you're looking that up, directed by Jim Stenstrom. Written by Glenn Leopold and Davis Doy, who wrote the story. Screenplay by Glenn Leopold. Based upon characters by William Hanna and Joseph Barbera. Music by Stephen Branson, who composed the music. And then made for a budget of $10 million U.S. dollars. It made $164.9 million U.S. dollars worldwide. Now, the only thing I can think of, see, I've looked at this several times, so I don't know if this is including DVD sales.
Okay.
It very well could be, but I feel like it made a shit ton of money. It made its money back and then some.
Yeah.
The very first weekend it was released in theaters, because it was released
this
in theaters.
This was in from theaters? My understanding. Holy
from my understanding, it was, yes.
Holy fuck. Okay, first off, you blew me away when you said the budget was $10 million for a fucking cartoon?
Yeah.
Is that common? I mean, like, maybe the newer ones nowadays, like Despicable Me, you know, which is not so much a cartoon, but it's that CGI.
Now, are you saying that's blowing you away because it's higher than you would imagine?
Yes.
Or lower?
Okay. Higher.
Well, I mean, now, if you take out the, however you feel about this, the fact that they get, you know, people in third world countries to make the artwork for, you know, most of the scenes and then ship it back, which is probably on the cheaper end.
Yeah.
They got a lot of top tier voice talent for
yes.
this movie. So, I mean, $10 million to me sounds reasonable for the amount of just the voice acting that they got for the movie.
Okay.
If not even for the art itself, which it's pretty good. It's pretty well drawn and animated.
Yeah, I forgot there's definitely some major voice talent in here.
And they were not at the beginning of their career either. I mean, these
yeah.
people were well established from the early 90s and late 80s.
But doesn't animation usually pay a little bit less than actually being in a film? Even though we have admitted that it does take talent to be a voice actor.
It does pay less, but, I mean, it's still a fairly decent job, or pay job. And the other benefit to it is that it's consistent work. Like, I mean, if
yes.
you can do the voice for a certain character, and we'll get into it, like the guy who did the voice for Freddy, all those, I mean, he's played Freddy from, like, almost his inception, if not his inception, all the way until now.
Yeah.
That is very steady work, I mean...
Yeah, that's wild.
And it doesn't matter if he ages physically like a lot of these actors, because he can always pull off the I'm almost a teenager, you know, Fred. So, I mean, you know, it works.
So the budget blew me away, and then the box office, which I'm going to go off and say that's definitely the box office.
It very well could be. I mean, I don't know. And then the DVD sales, I mean, made it even better, which is something that a lot of companies have forgot in the age of streaming. They used to make up for, discrepancies between, budget or, and then the box office by the back end DVD sales and or physical media sales. And now they're just like, well, we'll just put it on streaming. It's like, okay, so you get somebody for $15 a month, maybe, to pay for your streaming service, and then they drop off for the rest of the year after they watch it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you'd sold the physical media of it, you could have sold it roughly for about 20 to 30, and it would keep selling over time. I mean, you know, for that one item, you know, exactly. Not for the entire package, you know.
Yeah.
Principal players, we have Scott Innes playing Scooby-Doo in this one. Or as he would like to say, Ruby, Ruby, Roo. he has played Scooby-Doo's voice in the live-action movie. He also was Scrappy in the live-action movie.
Oh, my God.
he was in the Iron Claw as the ring announcer. He played Scooby, Scrappy, and Shaggy in Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law.
Oh, fuck, I love Harvey Birdman.
I had to say it Birdman because the way that it's done on the show, they kind of give it a little bit of twist there.
Yeah.
And he played Scooby from 1998 to 2009. So that's a lot of work as Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Billy West plays Norval Shaggy Rogers. Like, where's the food, man? Billy West is very famous.
Yeah.
Ren and Stimpy. He played both those characters.
Jesus, I didn't know he did both of them.
Futurama, he played Fry, Professor Farnsworth, Zoidberg. He in the movie Scoob, one of the more recent animated movies. I didn't like it, but it's, you know, whatever. 2019, I think, is when it came out. He played Muttley in that one. He, of course, also played Muttley in the Wacky Races, the new 2017 to 2019 version. He was actually a voice actor in the video game for World War Z, of all things. He is, of course, the Red M&M. Most people have heard him there.
Shut the fuck up. I didn't know that.
He played Bugs and Elmer Fudd in Space Jam. And in The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy, he played King Cobra and various other voices. And in the show Cat Dog, he played Rancid Rabbit and others. He was in a show called Zombie College. And he played Doug Funny and Roger Klotz in the Nickelodeon show Doug.
No the fuck? What the hell?
Now, that one I didn't know. I did not know that he was the voice of both. And when I thought about it, then I could hear it at least in Roger, if not in Doug's voice, when it played back in my mind.
Why, when I hear Billy West, am I thinking of Batman?
Adam West.
Adam West. Okay, thank you.
But yeah, he's been in a lot. Now, I'm going to go ahead and throw something out there while we're on him. I don't think that he's that good of a voice for Shaggy. He was the one thing that threw me off when I heard the voice during the show. Like, the guy, Scott Innes, good, you know, great Scooby-Doo. Everybody else played their parts fine. But Billy, when I heard that Shaggy, I don't know if it's because I'm used to Casey Kasem's version, and then, of course, later, Matthew Lillard's, which are very, very close. Matthew Lillard did a great job of matching Casey. But there's something about the way that he does Shaggy in this one that is just a little too far off, and it triggers that uncanny valley or whatever. It takes me out of it when I hear him talk.
Yeah, well, you had told me about this prior to me even watching this, because this was my first watch of this one, I think. I think it was. Yeah, it had to have been, or I never made it to the end. And I don't want to spoil anything yet. I know we are going to spoil eventually, but I didn't hear it. It's been a long time since I've seen the originals, and I really haven't seen a lot with fucking Matthew Lillard. So,
yeah, I'm just too partial to how he sounded otherwise, and it just it felt off to me.
Yeah.
Mary Kay Bergman played Daphne Blake. She went from Fred's girlfriend to talk show host in this movie.
There's some sexual tension between her and Fred in this fucking episode, more than what you see in the episode. This is a movie, but like in the episodes.
Yeah, they play off the fact that when they go off together that, you know, there's that joke that they're doing other things. That's the reason he – and even in this, I love that little joke that she has where when he's splitting them up, he puts Daphne with somebody else initially, I think with Shaggy for once. And then she's like, okay, as long as I get to go with this guy. And it was like the hot gardener. Well, he was a gardener at the time, but he turned out to be a detective. And Fred's like, nope, scrap that. We're going to be together, you know. Like, he didn't want her to go off together with that guy.
Major sexual tension between these two. I was like, what the fuck? This is more than I've ever noticed.
Then he's sitting there talking about how hot the Cajun lady is or whatever.
And she was.
Well, and then, of course, Daphne gets pissed off about that. She's mm-hmm. like, oh, really, Freddie? That's what we're doing? You know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So. These two. Those two. So them.
I knew when I saw the name of who this was, but I didn't realize the voice until I saw this and, you know, when I was putting the notes together. She is the voice of basically every woman on South Park up until her untimely death in like the late 90s. Like 1999, Mary Kay Bergman died at a very young age in a car accident or something. It was something accidental. She was either shot or it was a car accident. It was one of the two, something like drastic. And she was the voice of especially Miss Cartman and Kyle's mom, amongst others, on the show. But literally, she did every female voice, I believe, on South Park, minus like one or two that maybe
She committed suicide.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It says after suffering from depression and anxiety, she committed suicide in her West Hollywood, Los Angeles. That's Los Angeles. Yeah, I mean, that place is fucking... That place as a whole, all I'm going to say. She shot herself in the head, basically. 38 years old.
Yeah, she was really young.
Holy crap. I just remember her on fucking South Park when Cartman was calling Kitty a dildo. And she's like, well, I know a certain kitty that's sleeping with mommy tonight.
That was her. That
yes.
was very
oh,
much
my
her.
God.
And you know what's funny about it is that whenever she, it's not funny that, you know, obviously the circumstances, but what's funny is in an odd thing, this is how talented she was. It took them hiring at least four different women to replace the voices that she did herself on the show. At least four women.
Dang, I hope she was paid royally, but fuck. What? I hate to revisit, but like you almost wonder what could be going through someone's head that's that successful. What was depressing other than the fact that she was living in Los Angeles? That is not a healthy place to be.
That's probably what it was. I mean, she was probably, Hollywood, even before social media, was the kind of place where you were constantly comparing yourself to others and seeing the glamorous life they were living while you were still down here or whatever.
It's a contagious California thing. I hate to say it. We have a lot of beautiful people in California. Don't get me wrong. But like, yeah, we are constantly worried about our looks, you know, and it's not a healthy way to be.
Well, it's not only just looks. It's also success.
That is true.
You know,
yeah.
And I'm sure she had friends that were probably, given her, station or whatever, she probably had friends who were, maybe she wanted to be a full actress, like not just a voice, and they were living the dream that she didn't have. But she was also the voice of Captain Planet and the Planeteers of Dr. Blight and others. She played Quasimodo's mother on The Hunchback of Notre Dame. And she was JJ the Jet Plane for a lot of episodes on that show.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Damn.
We have Frank Welker playing Fred Jones from Generally Clueless Guy to Generally Clueless Producer in this movie. Frank Welker has played Fred for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I mean, he is, it's from, if from what I'm seeing, at least the 70s, he might have been the original voice for Fred. That's how long he's been playing Fred.
Yeah.
He's also played multiple characters in Futurama. He was Ralph the security guard in Animaniacs and in Pinky and the Brain.
Oh, my God. Among
other characters. He was multiple characters in Freakazoid. He was the Cave of Wonders voice in the 2019 Will Smith Aladdin movie.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, like, I was thinking the original Aladdin, but no, okay.
He played Megatron in multiple Transformers properties. Curious George, he played Sparky in Frankenweenie.
What?
He played the Martian voices.
Frank Welker played Frankenweenie.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
He was the voice of the Martians in Mars Attacks.
Yeah, that's a little funny.
He actually played
Abu.
Abu.
Yeah.
He played Abu in the Aladdin, at least TV series. I mean, if not the movie. So he's very much known for making animal noises. He did a lot of the animal voices in the Lion King, too.
What the fuck?
He was in Darkwing Duck.
He was in it, or was he Darkwing Duck?
No, that was, we'll get to who was Darkwing Duck here in a second, who's actually in this movie as well. He was in Goof Troop. He was in DuckTales. He played the Beagle Boys in both the original and in the newer one that they've come out with. He was Slimer and multiple characters in the Real Ghostbusters cartoon.
Oh, my God.
And then he's played Scooby at times and Dino Mutt.
What the fuck?
So he's done a ton.
And yes, he has been Fred since the inception, 1969.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was saying. You get some of these actors, they might not get paid like Hollywood price money, but they've got jobs for life. I mean, if they hit the right property. We got B.J. Ward playing Velma Dinkley. She's always the one to solve the mystery and has Scooby snacks, even if they're outdated and expired.
Yeah.
She played Scarlet and Gypsy and others in the original G.I. Joe television show, cartoon. She played Aunt Margaret on Curious George. She played Uvula and others on The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy.
Uvula? Isn't that a fucking body part?
Yeah, it's the thing in the back of your throat, you know.
Oh, I want to touch that little dangly thing. Let's swing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
On Harvey Birdman, she played Velma. She's on the Real Ghostbusters. She played multiple characters. She played Casey Kelp on the Snorks. Do you ever remember that show?
Yes.
And then on a pup named Scooby Doo, she played Mrs. Rogers. So she played Shaggy's mom on A Pup Named Scooby Doo.
Aww.
We have Adrienne Barbeau playing Simone Lenore in this one, who is, spoiler, a werecat.
Oh, whoa. A real one?
A
cougar?
She's both. Of course, Adrienne Barbeau, The Fog, Swamp Thing, Creepshow. She's been on the show before. Escape from New York, many others. Okay. I mean, she was married to John Carpenter at one point in time, or was his lover. You know, whichever. And so there was very many movies with him.
Yeah.
We have Tara Strong playing Lena Dupree, who is the duplicitous helper to Simone, the little Cajun girl in this one.
Yeah.
She's obviously known for being the voice of Harley Quinn, or a voice for Harley Quinn. There's been two actresses that's done it on the cartoons. She was Barbara Gordon and Batgirl before that. She plays the Powerpuff Girls. Beetlejuice, she was on the TV show. She was multiple voices. And she's done, she was on Rugrats. She played not Tommy,
everything.
But his brother.
Yeah.
I mean, she's been on a ton of shit.
Tara Strong is on TikTok. She's TikTok verified. And she has a strong set of juggies on her that she always has on display.
She always has, and that's why a lot of people have been upset that she's never played a live-action version of Harley Quinn, because she could pull it off.
Oh, yeah, I mean, she's got the body.
At one point in time, if you would have said 10 years ago, especially, with the fact that she did the voice anyways, and she's a fairly good-looking voice actress, she could have easily pulled off the character in live-action.
It makes me mad thinking about it now, because I was looking at her, and I have not seen her actually do the voice of Harley Quinn on TikTok. She's going through all these other voices that she does, where she'll do a voice and then she'll show the clip of where she did it And then whatever. But I haven't seen her do Harley Quinn yet. But like knowing that information and seeing her, the only thing I wonder is when that suit has to be so skin tight, getting it to fit her skin tight on her body and then fit over her jugs, I don't know how they would pull that off. It'd have to be stretchy just in the juggy area.
Yeah, it would have to, but I mean, still, like, it would have fit. I mean, or it would have fit the character. I mean, especially the way they portrayed her in the Arkham games. I mean, she has the goods in those games.
Yeah, no, she's got the body.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not to say that Margot Robbie actually did a good job imitating Tara Strong's voice as Harley Quinn. I got to give her credit for going the distance and actually making a suitable, you know, sounding version of Tara Strong's Harley Quinn, even if it wasn't exactly the one that we are used to. We have Cam Clark playing Detective Beau Neville, who is the red herring in the movie.
Yes.
They keep suspecting that he's one of the ne'er-do-wells that are, you know, the zombies, but no, they're real folks. Spoiler. Cam Clark's done a ton of stuff, but in particular, I had to put him down as being the voice of Leonardo and Rocksteady.
No, he did Rocksteady?
Yeah.
I always thought Bebop and Rocksteady were the same, not the same voice. They were obviously different, but I thought it was the same actor for some reason.
Yeah, it's different actors, voice actors, but he did do both of those.
He's played
Leonardo in a lot of things, too.
Wow. I love it.
Jim Cummings, now going back to who played Darkwing Duck, plays both Jacques and Morgan Moonscar, and he's totally not a werecat, not a werecat as well as the others. I mean, but Jim Cummings has been in about everything that you remember from your childhood from Disney.
Wow.
I mean, he was Winnie the Pooh, even in the new movie with Ewan McGregor, I think who was in that. He played Winnie the Pooh in that. He was Darkwing Duck. He played Tigger. He was Officer Bonkers the Bobcat, if anybody remembers Bonkers. I mean, back in the day.
Yeah.
He's always been Pete, or at least for what we remember from our childhood, especially in Goof Troop. You know, Goofy's neighbor, the guy who's always a piece of shit, to Goofy, but I mean, and Pete's always kind of a bad guy in most of the properties anyways, but Jim Cummings, yeah, he's very talented as a voice actor. And then we have Mark Hamill, of all people, playing Snakebite Scruggs, who's just trying to catch catfish, folks, and nobody will let him. And of course, Mark Hamill has done the voice of Joker in multiple things. He's the voice actor in a lot of things now. Joker is primarily what people adore him for. He was Luke Skywalker before he ruined Luke Skywalker for everybody. And, you know, what is it? The Last Jedi? Is that the one that he, I believe that's the one that he ruined it for everybody.
They should just name that movie Rey Skywalker. That's all people are ever going to remember.
Yeah, he was sucking on that blue alien titty milk in that movie. And he's also apparently a horrible person in real life. That's the one thing that I hate about, you know, Never Meet Your Heroes.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's got Trump derangement syndrome out the wazoo. And on top of that, this is a story that Gary from Nerdrotic always, you know, puts blast on the internet, but apparently is true. When Mark Hamill found out that his son was dating a former stripper and had got her pregnant, he basically did even offered money to his son to have the child aborted. They didn't. That he now has a grandchild or a granddaughter, and he has nothing to do with her.
Sounds like Joe Biden and his fucking granddaughter.
But Mark Hamill's all about pro-choice. It's just if it's, you know, his family, kill it with fire, unless I deem it appropriate,
oh
you know.
Oh, my God. It makes AWOL's Nation's song, Kill Your Heroes, make more sense now.
Yeah, he's just awful, folks. I hate to say it, but he really is. I mean, and you grew up, I mean, especially, you know, if he was anything like the characters that, or Luke that he played at least, then, you know, you would have thought that he'd been more, you know, a better person. But he's apparently closer to the Joker in real life.
You see why I feel the way I feel about fucking, what's his name, who played Dean Winchester, Jensen?
Yeah.
He's too good of an actor to be that good of a person in real life. I'm not buying it. There's something about him. One day we're going to find out. It's going to fucking happen. I swear to God, one day we're going to find out. And I'm like, you motherfuckers, I was right. But you still can't deny the good actor that they are. They're good at their job.
I mean, if they're just playing themselves, that's still... synopsis for the movie. Years after Scooby and the gang separated because all the villains turned out to be regular people in masks, Daphne Blake has become a successful talk show host. Along with Fred Jones, her producer and former boyfriend, she has decided to start a paranormal investigation series to determine if she can find real evidence of the supernatural. Props to you, girl. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Fred decides to surprise Daphne by getting the rest of the gang back together as they investigate Louisiana. A lot of false leads eventually brings the gang to Moonscar Island out in the bayou, where Daphne is going to find overwhelming proof that the supernatural is real and very dangerous. Scooby and Shaggy are snacking, zombies are attacking, and jinkies, Velma is getting to the bottom of things.
As per usual. It's always the quiet ones, you know?
Listen, this has to be said. Linda Cardellini in the live-action version of Scooby-Doo as Velma, especially when she turns evil, I think in the second movie. I get them confused. It's been a while. Hot. Uber hot, like temperature of the sun hot.
Everyone always says that she's hot, and I get it. Like, the nerdy one, the cute little short nerdy one, underneath all that, yes, there's definitely something hiding. She's just wearing a bulky sweater.
quotes from Daphne Blake, "What I need is a real-life ghost." Then Velma says, "That's an oxymoron, Daph."
It is.
Real live ghost. Norval, Shaggy Rogers, as two female zombies approach him and Scooby-Doo, like, we're not looking for any ghoul friends, are we, Scooby?
So fucking dumb.
Velma, trying to find Shaggy and Scooby, I think we should split up. And then Fred's like, good idea. And then Daphne's like, I'll go with Bo. And then Fred's frowning, says, bad idea, bad idea.
So jelly. Celosa.
Shaggy, after him and Scooby fall into a hole, Mojo the pig snorting at them from above, and he says, "Zoinks, how humiliating, chased into a hole by one third of a BLT."
Oh, I was dying when I heard that. I was like, no, the fuck he didn't. Don't you dare talk about the piggy like that.
Poor Mojo. Snakebite scrubs to Scooby and Shaggy after helping them onto the boat after they were attacked by gators. Should have let the gators get you. I can't stand tourists. Now all your splash and chase Big Mona away.
Oh, yeah.
And then Jacques like, quit your gremlin, Snakebite. You ain't never caught that fish, and you ain't never going to dead.
The self is strong in this.
Yeah. Velma, solving mysteries was a lot more fun than selling them because she's now she's got a bookshop, and you know, it's funny too. I bring that up because she's like Ray Stantz was from Ghostbusters. You know, Ray went from being, you know, in the Ghostbusters to having his own occult bookshop. That's what they did with Velma. And I feel like that was deliberate, you know, that they did that connection.
Yeah, possibly.
Lena Dupree, sorry, Fred, I really do like you. And then she holds up a voodoo doll of him and moves it to a wall, which makes him fly back to the opposite side. And then Fred, with his voice strained, what would you do if you didn't like me, you know?
Well, do you not want to find out?
Shaggy and Scooby are almost aged to death by the werecats, but are saved and revert back to normal. And then Shaggy says, like, I was beginning to feel like a raisin.
They're so, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, they're like, I want to say spot on, but that's not the word. It's like literal. There we go. With what's happening. Yeah. And it's funny, but they make it funny.
Yeah, they do a pretty good job with their comedic timing of how they sell it. I mean, that takes talent. I mean, regardless of what you think otherwise. Visually, I love designs for the characters in this. They kept them similar to how you remembered, but they updated them. I mean, they do look updated versus the 70s version.
Oh, yeah. They actually have eyes and pupils and things like that. So there's that. The zombies looked really good.
Yeah, the zombies look really good, and the only thing that bothers me about it is the fact that the zombies, and that kind of gets in the story a little bit, are actually good guys, and they never are actually trying to attack anybody.
Yeah, it always looks like they are, but in fact they are not, so they do a really good job with that, because they're trying to help.
Yeah, they're trying to warn the characters that the two werecats that they're, you know, associating with are the real villains. And even whenever some of the characters almost fall in quicksand, they hand them, like, you know, they kind of throw out like vines for them to pull themselves out with. I mean, they are helping. It's just, yeah, it doesn't look that way.
No, not at all. I mean, it's a 1998 cartoon. It's not updated as you would see cartoons today. Well, cartoons today are CGI.
And some of them are hot garbage.
Yes. I mean, some of them are CGI, and I do admit, embarrassingly, I did really like the look. And it's not the most recent Ninja Turtle cartoon series that's out. It was the one prior that had, like, Seth Green and quite a few famous actors in it. And it was all CGI. And I was, and you know what? Maybe it was that I was getting past the CGI with the acting. Because I was surprised. At first I saw it, and I was like, what the fuck is this boxy looking shit? And then the more I watched the cartoon, I was like, this is actually good. This is actually really good.
You probably got into it through the acting. Because, it had to have, like, been. Visually, I mean, I don't think they've really done, I mean, I think there was one series that kind of took the old designs and just, and like, drew them a little bit better. But they've really not did a good job with the Ninja Turtles, in my opinion. And I know this is biased.
Yes,
but, like,
we're going
to
be.
That original 80s cartoon, like, they looked perfect.
Yes, they were rounder, and, you know, they looked like they could be dumpy teenagers. Yeah, they had some muscle going on, but teenagers do have muscles, you know.
Now we pissed off the audience, who is all about the Eastman and Laird original versions, which are a lot edgier, a lot more sinister looking.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that's fine. I totally understand that, but you got to remember, I was a kid. I was like 7 or 8 when the cartoon came out.
Yeah.
I don't have a history with the original sinister looking version of the Turtles. So, you know, the Archie comics versions of them are what I grew up with, because I read the shit out of those comics.
Yeah.
That's what, you know.
Same. What else was I going to say, though? I didn't really like the werecats too much. I mean, I think they did a good job making them look kind of scary and evil, and that they got that point across, but I thought they were kind of lazy with it, because it felt like everything blended. I guess it's supposed to, because they're supposed to be one fur color, but, like, their nails, everything was all kind of like one color with the black outline to define what you were looking at, and I thought that was kind of lazily done, in my opinion.
I'll be honest with you, the werecat inclusion in general to me seemed like a bit much. You already have the supernatural, the zombies. You didn't. I mean, if they wanted to make the two characters some kind of like supernatural, like they've extended their age somehow, you can do that. But you didn't then make them were creatures. Like,
yeah.
I mean, the were creature thing never fit to me whatsoever. At least werecats, like, if they were wearing gators or something, since they were in Louisiana, then maybe. But, like, where does the cats come in at? Like, that just, I know the woman has cats all throughout her house.
Yeah.
But, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but they didn't work it in any Egyptian, like, link to either the characters, which would have been cool because, you know, where cats from Egypt would make sense to me in a roundabout way. But,
yeah.
They're descended from French, settlers or whatever. So I don't understand where the cat connection comes in there whatsoever.
I'm glad you said something, because I didn't either, which we're kind of, actually, that's a good segue into story. We're into story now.
Yeah.
You know, let's start from the beginning. We have these characters that you kind of discussed where they have all parted ways. They have come together because they want to find, as Daphne would say, a real life ghost.
And let's back it up one more second. This movie, I want to say, if James Gunn might have stole from this, I don't know which one was written first, but the live action movie basically takes the initial premise of this movie and moves in a different direction. They would start off the same. It's, you have the character solving a current mystery or a mystery at some point. It's the same old, same old.
Yeah.
And then we skip ahead and they're all broken up. I mean, that is literally what the live action movie did. It's just that they hate each other in the live action. And this one, they separated upon good terms. It was just like, you know, we've kind of done this to death, guys. Let's do something else.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of really, I don't know. Like, how do you start a Scooby movie? You know, I don't know. I thought that was fine. I thought it was kind of weird that they had separated so weird. It was kind of funny seeing Scabby. Yeah, Scabby. Shaggy and Scooby. That would be their couple name, you know, their Hollywood couple name.
Oh, God, their ship name.
Yes, exactly. You know, seeing them be, I guess, like some kind of security guards of some sort, but eating
at
all
an airport. At a customs, you know, check-in, yeah, of all things.
And getting to eat all the fucking food that was confiscated, if you will. Anyways, the gang is separated. They come back together. They're off to find actual real evidence of anything supernatural. They end up in Louisiana, and we don't get much of a story. We don't really know what's going on. The only thing we know as a person watching this is that there's going to be zombies on this island.
Yeah, because from the title, obviously.
Yes, exactly. And that I like that. And let me explain, because it's because you're like, where are the fucking zombies? You know something's going to happen, and it's freaking me out.
They do show a montage, which is a classic of the, you know, staple of the, you know, Scooby-Doo series, of them like trying to find, you know, supernatural stuff in Louisiana, and like it's either more people with masks again, or it's just, you know, like just people just playing tricks to get money off people, you know, like, oh, this is a haunted house. And then they go in there and they find the wires and all that sort of thing. And of course, Shaggy and Scooby are like scared to death. They're like, you know, they really do not want to find any evidence that the supernatural is real. And even if these people are like in masks, they're still like running for their lives. Like they're going to have their souls taken from them, you know.
Poor dog. He's really been through some shit, you know.
But you're spending all this time in the montage and the intro, and you're like, okay, where are the zombies?
Where are the zombies? Yeah. Even when you get to the house, and how mad, I mean, I was mad. She kept kicking Scooby out, although he was being a bad dog. He was being a certified bad boy.
And I think this in the trivia, this is the only time that I'm doing the same thing you did. Scooby has ever shown like any kind of like malice toward another animal. Like he's usually like friends with every other animal he meets. And like for some reason, he did not get on with these cats whatsoever, you know.
Were all the cats weren't all bad. It was just the two werecats that were.
Yeah, yeah, they were the problem. Well, actually, there's three. Jacques is a werecat.
Yeah, but they weren't actually cats that would make Scooby. Because I was wondering if that's why Scooby was chasing them, was because the cats had some malice behind them or something.
They just, it's literally just a running joke because, I mean, you know, that then whenever the girl looks and she's like, oh, no, that dog can't come. And then, or Lena, when she says that, and Shaggy lies and says, oh, yeah, he's perfectly cool with cats. There's no problems. And the very first thing, as soon as he sees them, it's he's off the leash. He's like tearing down shit. He does this like two or three times in the movie. Like Scooby destroys like a ton of shit around that mansion, you know, chasing these cats.
Yeah. What brought them to the mansion is was there some kind of news article that was basically talking about disappearances for people who go to visit the island?
There was disappearances for people that visit. It was rumored to be haunted. That's what they're really going for, because the zombies don't even play into it.
Oh, yeah, not at all.
And actually, whenever they start seeing supernatural things, it's a haunting is what really is happening, because that's whenever they see like the ghostly figure of Moonscar.
Which is the pirate.
Yeah.
Which he was a bad guy. But they make him out to be a good guy at the end.
It's pick your worst enemy. Somebody who is a thief and a plunderer and probably did other things that rhymes with grape, versus somebody who has been stealing people's souls and damning them to a life of the an eternity of the undead, just so that they can extend their life out. Like,
they wouldn't have done that if he started it.
Well, remind me, because I'm it's been a bit since I've watched this, so I don't remember that part. Like, how did he start the, because I thought they were already werecats and they were pissed off that he invaded their island. And then he started, and then they, because they'd been doing that to other people. It's just that he happened to bring like a bigger group to the island and got it notoriety. And that's whenever they started like wholesale, like, okay, we're going to take all of your all's lives.
Well, they came onto the island. It looked like a total pilgrimage thing, you know, never trust the pilgrims. But they enter the island and the two girls got away. And while they were up in a tree, they watched them basically grape and pillage, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Because there was a whole colony there of the yes. French descendants. That's what it was.
Exactly. Yes, so then they got into, I don't remember exactly how they got into.
It was in voodoo and witchcraft is yes, what they got into.
That to help keep them alive, to try to, I don't know, get their, to not only stay alive, but to get their, they wanted something back specifically, and I don't remember. Now I'm drawing a blank.
And that's where the story breaks down for me, is because they have too complicated of a backstory.
Thank you.
I mean, it'd be
it
one
does,
thing
yeah.
if, and then working in the werecat angle on top of it. It like if they would have just been witches that stole people's souls to extend their life, that would have been one thing. But the werecat angle just makes no sense to me whatsoever. It's like, how can we amp this up just a little bit more? Oh, make them were creatures. You know, it's like werewolves have been done to death. What can we do? And it's like were cats. And it's like, all right, that's where we're going. It's okay. Like, really?
I'm okay. Going to the plot right now. Let me see. While being chased, let me see. Okay, Manskar and his crew invaded the island. They chased the settlers into the bayou where they were eaten alive by alligators, but Simone and Lena escaped. They prayed to their cat god to curse Manskar and were transformed to immortal werecats. They killed the pirates, but later realized that invoking the cat god power had also cursed them. Okay, every harvest moon, since they lured and exploited victims to drain their lives and preserve their immortality, hiring Jacques along with, along the way to facilitate their plot in exchange for making him immortal, with the zombies and ghosts being their previous victims who awaken every harvest to try to scare people away to prevent them from suffering the same fate. So they were cursed, obviously, to live forever. So in order to not be taken away, I guess, or suffering some kind of crazy death, they have to, unfortunately, take the souls of victims. And it sucks because that does make them evil people, like, accept your fate, you know?
Yeah.
At some point, accept your fate, or it sucks they were put into that situation in the first place. But yeah, it seems like they were witches already, like you had mentioned. We're going to call it witches. We're going to call it what it is. Sorceresses, if you want to.
Yes, sorcery. And then on top of that, you're right. It's really weird given the history of Moonscar himself and what he did to the people on the island, driving them into the swamp, that at the end of it, it's portrayed as a good thing. That Moonscar is given his release, you know, whenever they finally, you know, destroy the idol or whatever they do to, because the last few seconds or minutes of the movie, I'm kind of foggy on, I mean, to be honest, but.
Well, a lot happened at the end. It got very, everything started kind of blending together.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was at with it. And then, so whenever he gets freed, it's almost like, you know, it's portrayed as a good thing. It's like, really? It's like, the dude wasn't good. Like,
yeah, what I was thinking. It looks like he goes to heaven.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it's really weird. And then the whole, they prayed to a cat god. It's like, couldn't they have, like, worked in more like, I mean, and maybe they were trying not to be, even back then, try to be insensitive to, you know, like, voodoo culture and sort of, but couldn't they have worked in something like, the Loa, you know, or whatever, something from like voodoo culture, which I know this might predate voodoo too. So that's a whole thing you got to worry about. But they could have worked in something that was more, that felt more Louisiana than, you know, a cat god. I mean, like, that's still Egyptian to me. Like, it just doesn't sound right, you know, for the area that they're trying to portray.
So I'm typing something into Google and I type in French, and I meant to put Louisiana, but I typed in P.O., and it says French Polynesians. And I'm like, are the French like the Spaniards? Did they fucking just go and embed themselves into every fucking culture they could?
Probably, yes. Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. The story with Lena and Simone are just – it's a little too – it's a little too complicated. I mean, and I'm not even saying for a kid's movie. It's definitely too complicated for a kid's movie. But it's even too complicated for, like, just what they were trying to portray. Like, they could have worked, like, one of those angles out, made even another movie out of it. Like, the concept of the werecats and the cat god could have been its own movie if they would have really wanted to do that later and just focused on the zombie aspect of this.
Yeah.
And that's the whole reason why I want it to be more, like, voodoo-based or, like, Louisiana centric, because you got zombies in it. I mean, that's why you set it in Louisiana. Why not go that route and, like, work in, like, lore around that? You know, they could have brought in, you know, maybe the two characters worship the whatever the term is that they use in voodoo for, like, the Lord of the Dead, you know, like the character, I mean, that they kind of like the character that they have in Princess and the Frog. You know who I'm talking about? Like Dr. whatever, Facilier or yeah. whatever. Like something like that.
Yeah.
You know, would have been cool.
That would have been, yeah, amazing.
But the cat thing just, I was like, where cats? Really? Okay.
That's what they went with, you know? And that's what we got.
But the zombies are cool.
Yeah.
I mean...
But it's so funny that the zombies are such a minor plot in this fucking film called Scooby-Doo and the Zombie Island, or On Zombie Island.
On Zombie Island, and it's like they're like a fraction of the overall story.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's craziness. I did like how they showed the zombies animating, like the spirits like entering at night and how they rose up from the ground. All of that is great.
They needed if to play the Freaks Come Out at Night.
Speaking of that, I mean, jumping ahead just a slight bit, what did you think about the music with regards to that? Because they played the music fit the scenes every time that they played something. It was usually like, you know, when they were running from the zombies or whatever, it was playing some kind. Fitting in the sense that it was like for a Scooby-Doo show.
Yeah.
It was totally wrong for like a horror element, because like when the zombies are rising, it's like this poppy, like, you know, kind of like hippie folk song or whatever about how they're going to get... You know, it's trouble now. What are you going to do? But, like, you know, that's what Scooby-Doo is. So, I mean, you know.
I didn't even really notice that. You know what stood out to me was the Louisiana music when they're out on the town or whatever. And it was this very...
The Calliope-type music or whatever that the...
Kind of. Is that what they were playing? Calliope?
Well, it's like... it's catico or something. I forget what the phrase is, but yeah, it's kind of got like this kind of harmonic.
Yes.
I mean, it's got you know, different instruments in there. So
yeah, yes. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. Even though we're not really making sense what we're trying to say, I'm splicketing the same lingity you are. And it's like, it sounded like a Popeyes commercial.
Zydeco, that is there the name of it I was looking for, Zydeco music or whatever.
Okay. And I was like, at first I didn't think it was appropriate, but then I was like, wait, this is Louisiana music because I've heard this in a Popeyes commercial. Not the exact song, but that style of music.
They got accordions.
Yes.
They got washboards. It's all kinds of stuff.
Jesus.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that. So that was, at first I was questioning if it was appropriate for them to use that. I'm like, you're in Louisiana. I was thinking jazz.
Jazz would have been a nice other way to go with
it. Yes. They did not have any jazz music whatsoever, though. Maybe I was thinking too much into it, but that weird Zatarans music, I don't know, was a little... It was a little too peppy, and I guess it's supposed to be because it's not scary.
It's Scooby-Doo. That's
yeah,
what they do with it.
They're trying
it,
to show the culture, and I didn't think it was the appropriate culture. Newsflash, it was. It just took me a moment to realize, okay, no, this is technically Louisiana music.
Yeah, it's a weird music to fit with the scenery that
yes.
they've got going on.
Because it doesn't look like Louisiana. It looks like they're just at a regular, like, corner store anywhere, in anywhere USA.
Until they get to Moonscar Island,
exactly.
Then you get the Cajun swamp vibe.
Exactly, that makes sense. So I don't know. I was just like, they didn't do a good job when it comes to the story and the visuals of making it look like they were in Louisiana until they're on the bayou. And even the bayou just looks like a body of water.
Yeah.
Like when I think of the bayou, I'm thinking of the Princess and the Frog.
Yeah, that's the other thing. They did a lot more open water. I mean, if they really wanted to give it more of like a swampy vibe, there should have been more trees. I mean, like,
yeah, lily pads,
moss covering that kind of stuff, you know, things like that would have definitely improved it.
Exactly. So, yeah, visually and kind of in line with the story, I didn't feel like we were in Louisiana, other than Popeye's fucking famous chicken music. So,
love that chicken from Popeye's.
Or Popeye's Louisiana chicken, as they like to call it. Out in my neck of the woods.
The song that I'm thinking of is it's called Terror Time Again is the name of the song or whatever.
Lord, am I playing that at the end of this fucking podcast?
I mean, you could be. I don't know. But, like, yeah, like the lyrics are, I've got it pulled up here. You hear the screeching of an owl. You hear the wind begin to howl. You know there's zombies on the prowl. And it's terror time again. They got you running through the night. It's terror time again. And you just might die of fright. And then, you know, it goes on from there. But it's basically describing what you're seeing in the scene. But very upbeat, just like, you know, Scooby-Doo always has. You know, it's not, yeah, it's not like anything that's, you know, scary in any way, shape, or form.
Lord.
And I think that's the reason, that's the thing that disappointed me about this movie. Because in my mind, I pictured this as being the first Scooby thing that was horrific. Because it was, you know, monsters and stuff, real monsters this time. And when I watched it, like, they did everything in their power to remove the horror elements out of it.
They did. Like, they really did. I'm glad you said that, because I think they were afraid that this was going to be too scary for the kids. So while they added the actual look of horror, which we have to appreciate, they were like, okay, let's dress it up for the kids so that they're not screaming and crying and we don't get a letter from some fucking Karen complaining about how we made this movie too scary for a little junior, you know?
Exactly. That's exactly what they've done. And it's, and I was really disappointed, because, like, when it got to the zombies and you had that scene, like I said, really well done, where the spirits were going to the ground and then the zombies were climbing out. And it's just like, okay, this is what I've been waiting for all of the movie.
Yes. We're
finally getting to it. And then the zombies come out and it's like the goofy. And I'm like, I don't know why I expected differently, but, like, I was let down, because when I saw that scene, I'm like, this was the one time you could have just edged over and shown a little bit of the horror elements of it. But then you have, you know, the way the music plays, the way that Scooby and Shaggy are doing, you know, the things that they do, and there's no threat to them whatsoever. I mean, they're always, if there was just the least little bit of hint of a threat toward them, it would have played differently, but they didn't go that route.
This movie would not survive today. It would not survive because of the culture they refuse to show. It would not survive because it's not enough horror for the kids. Because back in the day, if you wanted something super, if you were into major horror as a kid, you were a freak. Let's just call it what it was. You were,
and they didn't make, anything for you either. I mean, if you wanted that.
But we apparently are raising a bunch of freaks now, because the kids want the horror. I don't need to bring up fucking Five Nights at Freddy's again, because everyone complained, where's the horror? Where's the gore?
Even if you want to go this route, The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy, it has more horror elements than this does.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was shown on friggin' what? Cartoon Network. I mean,
it was still an upbeat, peppy cartoon, though.
Yeah, but I mean, the they hinted that there was threats. I mean, and courage. I mean, since we covered it.
Yeah.
Courage the Cowardly Dog. I mean, you know, like, it, he had very much, like, it was insinuated that he was going, that something was going to happen to him. And multiple times things did happen to Eustace and, you know, and his wife. So, I mean, that show had bite to it. I mean,
that show had creep and horror mixed in it so bad that sometimes I left or went away from an episode shaking, like, what the fuck? Like, that was dark.
And I mean, we shouldn't compare it, I mean, really, to Scooby-Doo, because I know it's a different property, but this was their moment.
It was their opportunity.
And honestly, we'll cover this in a future season, because, I mean, A, the Hex Girls got boys of a certain generation all kinds of messed up.
Yeah.
But the Witch's Curse Scooby-Doo movie did have more of a threat to it, did have more bite. I mean, because I've seen that more recently, and Tim Curry, I mean, he is actually threatening in that, is like, you know, one of the characters, and which is kind of a spoiler because he's not supposed to be until the end. But having said that, I mean, there is a threat in that movie, and the character, and you actually get the idea that the characters might not be okay, even though it ultimately turns out fine. But they never even attempted that in this movie. Like, I never once thought that any of the main cast was going to be hurt by anything.
Yeah, the threat wasn't as good. I thought the threat was good when Scabby was in the van eating.
Yeah, now that, yes, and the zombies were creeping up on them, yes, from all angles. That was the one good scene in the movie to me.
Yeah, exactly. Other than that, like, I don't know. We have to remember this is from a different time. Again, like I said, we didn't have the same horror that we have for kids now. We didn't have on YouTube the amount of jump scare horror that the kids are into and everything. True. So, true. You know, which is, I think jump scare is a night, believe it or not, is a soft way of introducing kids to horror. It's fast. It's efficient. It's like a piercing. You don't have enough time to complain about the pain. It's done before you can even be like, this was the worst thing I've ever experienced in my life.
So I guess I should ask you then, in that situation, should we try to be generous to the movie and try to view it from the lens of when it came out? Or should we just, I mean, or from, like, you know, where we're at? Because I feel like it should be from where we're at now.
I think so too, I mean, yes. I am just giving the disclaimer that despite how I feel today, for anyone else that is like, well, fuck, I'm not going to watch this. This is a stupid movie. You should still watch it because it was a different time. It was a different era. And at the end of the day, it is still Scooby-Doo. And Scooby-Doo was always a family-friendly, spooky type of show.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, it like I said, the music, I can't really, it's Terror Time is too upbeat, but at the same time, I can't fault it because that's what Scooby-Doo was, yes, at that point.
I didn't enjoy it. But it's Scooby-Doo, and we love, yeah, Scooby-Doo. It gets a pass because it's Scooby-Doo. It doesn't mean that we're going to – I don't know what our scores are going to be at the end of this, but, you know, it doesn't mean we're going to give it a passing score. We're not just going to be like, oh, well, okay, this is a great movie, and we're going to give it a four out of five, you know, whatever. But it is one of those – I would put this on. I would put this on during spooky season.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, you do watch it during spooky season. That's what I was just looking up. When the bus driver, the elderly bus driver character in Trick or Treat, is flipping through the channels because he has nothing to watch on Halloween because he hates Halloween. He's basically the Scrooge of Halloween. He turns to an image that I did not know where it came from. I knew it was Scooby-Doo, but I did not know where it was from until he flips to a scene where this woman turns into a werecat while he's flipping through the TV screen. So you see this movie in Trick or Treat.
Oh, shit. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, this movie that is shown for at least a brief second, the big turn for, you know, the end of the movie is shown in Trick or Treat.
Yeah. I feel like we jumped into music. Did we discuss acting? There's not much to discuss with acting because
the voice actors are great. Yeah. Like I said, the only one I do, like I've said before, Billy West, he just does not, there's something about his portrayal of Shaggy that's off enough to me that it takes me out of,
yeah,
it every time he speaks. Otherwise, everybody, I mean, you get the real Fred in this. Like, he's played Fred forever. So, yeah. I mean, you know, and, Daphne sounds like Daphne and most of the other things that you've ever heard her in, because that actress, unfortunately, that killed herself, she could, like, imitate so many different female voices, high, low, whatever.
Yeah.
And Velma is not really in the movie enough to really be that big of a thing, but she, still her voice is not unlike anything you've heard her play before. I mean, yeah, her being played before. And Jacques is appropriately Cajun, you know.
Yeah.
Snakebite is appropriately hillbilly. It all, you know, it fits for what they're trying to do. I don't really have anything to say about it. I mean, the acting stands up. I mean, you could say what you want to about anything else, but the acting and the visuals are the two main things in this movie.
Exactly.
They really are. Let's get into a little bit of trivia, and then we'll kind of give our thoughts on this.
Okay.
This film is dedicated to Don Messick, the original voice of Scooby-Doo.
Aww.
This is the first time that Scooby-Doo shows any aggression, like I said, toward any other animal. In all the previous series, he's kind and friendly, not only to cats, but mice, gophers, little baby chicks, etc. So for whatever reason, Scooby, he was eating too much of that, you know, contraband food, and it made him angry. I don't know what happened to him there. This film marks the first time someone besides Casey Kasem voiced Shaggy. The reason for that, and this is so stupid, is that Casey refused to voice Shaggy because it was a vegetarian himself, and he did not like how seeing Shaggy portrayed eating, of all things, crayfish in the movie. Not that he's eating, like, meat. He's eating crayfish, but that was too much. It's like, you know.
Do you think that was really Casey Kasem, or do you think that was his psycho wife at the time that was controlling him?
Could have been. I mean, you know, that phrase, even though it's not technically right and causes a lot more problems than it solves, you know, happy wife, happy life. I mean, you know, a lot of guys still abide by it. So,
well, she didn't die. He didn't die until 2014. So that was way after this. I'm trying to, she was married to him in 1980. I don't know when she started taking control of him. But
I didn't know that was a thing. So you're telling me some new stuff that I've not heard before.
Yeah, it was towards the end of his life. Like, his children couldn't see him. I don't think his ex-wife. I feel like his ex-wife was trying to, like, get in contact with him too. But it was primarily the children, and I think the wife at the time had them written out of the will, and I think she was in control of everything, and they were convinced that their dad was not in a good place, and that, you know, she was way younger than him, so there was a lot of ill intent behind a lot of things. He died of sepsis, though, but I know that the kids were trying to get him to the doctor.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, let me see, and his wife, so Casey Kasem died at, it doesn't say what age he died at, 82 years old. And his wife currently, let's see if we got her age, she's 69 now. So she's a good, 20-some years older or younger than him.
The 13-year-old me has to respond to you saying that and saying, nice.
Nice. Shut up.
You said 69.
Oh, shut up. She's 69 now. I don't know how old she was when he died. So if she's 69 now... She was way young. Maybe she was in her 40s, so.
Yeah, it sounds roughly about 40s, maybe 50s, if that. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, anyways, yeah.
That stinks, but, like, I mean, and it could have been her, but that, I think that's a bullshit reason. I mean, there's one scene where, like, Shaggy eats, you know, as I would say, crawfish, but, you know, crayfish is how it's technically said. And that's the reason he didn't voice him. It would have been great if he would have been the voice of him in this movie. No shade to Billy West, but I love the voices he does for Futurama, but he wasn't Casey. Daphne being the believer and Fred being the skeptic is a reversal of the roles from A Pup Named Scooby-Doo, where they, you know, it's the other way around. It's usually Daphne's always, you know, like, there's no such thing as a supernatural in that.
Yeah.
And I grew up watching, I mean, that's the, to be honest, A Pup Named Scooby-Doo, I watched more of than the original Scooby-Doo show. I don't know how you were, but that's what I watched the most because it came out at just the right time for me to get invested in it. And it was updated for our time period and the age we were, you know, around then. So
I did, but well, A Pup Named, I do remember, cause I remember the, intro.
They were all little bitty kids.
Yes. Okay. Know. So yes, I do remember A Pup Named Scooby-Doo. It was Scrappy-Doo that fucking got on my goddamn motherfucking nerves.
The other thing about Pup Named Scooby-Doo is, they have a character in it literally named Red Herring. He was Fred's nemesis. And as redhead myself, I always found it funny that it went the route of portraying him as the redheaded kid as the bully between the two of them, even though it's a thing in America where redheads are bullies to other people in movies. I mean, unless you're a ginger, you don't realize this.
Quit being an asshole.
Yeah, we're always portrayed as being the assholes to everybody else, even though if you were the redhead, you were the one getting your ass beat because, like, you know, apparently nobody likes a redhead. I don't know.
They never portray actual, like, certain groups of people for what they actually are. Like, for instance, Latinas, they only portray them as beautiful, sensual women. How often do you see them be toxic in movies?
The only show that kind of shows that is Modern Family, like.
Well, yeah.
With Sofia Vergara.
And that's why we love her, because we're like, that's how it is. You're going to get the attitude, you know, whether you're right or wrong, something didn't go right, and it fucking pissed her off, you know?
Well, speaking of that, a movie we'll be covering very shortly, Idle Hands, the Latina in that.
She's not a real Latina.
Well, she's, you know, she's adjacent, but she's very much, you know, like the typical white girl.
Yeah,
you know, girlfriend.
She's a white skin.
Yeah, she's, there's none of the hot, spicy, like, you know, I'm going to stab you, bitch type, you know, character in her. So,
yeah, I wonder how she is in real life with her husband, Cash. I wonder if she is a little toxic. Some guys really like that. Fucking, I don't get it. I'm glad guys like that only because I'm married, but it benefits me, but I still don't understand. I sometimes I'm like, why does he put up with me, you know?
The other movie I think of quite a bit whenever I think of like the bully, you know, redheads is Billy Madison with the old Doyles or whatever.
It's
because he goes to three different schools in that, and each school the redhead, the old duel is basically the bully for that grade. And they're all redheads. All right. Screenwriter Glenn Leopold's prior credits include The Night Ghoul of Wonderland, 20,000 Screams Under the Sea, and The Ransom of Scooby Chief.
What the hell?
I mean, at least he had, you know, prior Scooby writing.
Yeah,
I mean, under
exactly.
His belt. The house Daphne waits in front of, which presumably belongs to her, resembles the house that Daphne and Velma share together later in a Scooby-Doo Valentine, which came out in 2005.
Lesbos.
There's been rumors. There are a few in-jokes as the gang settle into Moonscar Mansion. And the first is when Shaggy ponders if he should dress up for dinner, opening a suitcase full of identical clothing that he's always already wearing. And then he trims his whiskers, but then they look no different.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Fred tries on an ascot before deciding that he shouldn't probably wear it. You know,
ascot is so gay.
At least they played homage to it, fact that he wore it all the time back in the 70s.
Exactly. Even in the 70s, I wouldn't have gotten that. Like, I feel like that was only a thing for rich, upper-class white guys.
Very rich.
Which is what he portrays.
Yeah, he's the rich douchebag character. I mean, you know, without being as douchey as he could be, but...
Exactly. I want to go back real quick. I did not know that one time we had wished our Daphne a happy birthday, and I used the scene of Fred opening the van doors and everyone popping out with saying, you know, surprise or whatever. It looks like they're saying happy birthday because they're wearing party hats, there's confetti, there's, you know, little blowers, if you will.
It is because it's Daphne's birthday in this movie. That's why they're there.
Okay, that makes sense. Then, okay, and it's so funny that it was from this movie and I had not yet seen this movie. So when I saw it in the movie, I was like, oh my God, I'm finally getting to see the real live action version of this.
Yeah, that's where it's from. I mean, because it's the reason, that's what Freddie, I don't know if it's his attempt to get back with, you know, and patch up things between him and Daphne, but like Fred, whenever he brings them back, it's for her birthday. That's the surprise.
Yeah.
Because she even mentions it. She's like, guys, I forgot it's my birthday. I've been working so hard on this new show that I completely forgot it's my birthday. You know, that's what she says. While the movie's promotion was that Mystery Inc. had never met a real monster before, this is technically not true, as they had encountered together several real supernatural monsters and beings in the following, episodes or movies. Ghost Who's Coming to Dinner from 1988, Mystery in Persia from 1973, Ghost of the Ancient Astronauts in 1984, and A Halloween Hassle at Dracula's Castle in 1984.
Halloween Hassle at Dracula's Castle. What the fuck?
Hey, that's Scooby-Doo for you. The entries between 85 and 88 had real monsters, but only starred some of the crew.
Okay.
So, this is the first Scooby-Doo production that alludes to a romantic relationship between Fred and Daphne, which had been poked fun at in the sensitive male / Bravo Doobie-Doo in 1997. They get jealous of each other when Fred takes a shine to Lena and Daphne is interested in Beau. Velma also forms a friendship with Bo, but denies an attraction to him, probably playing into her lesbianic, you know, tendencies a little bit. The fact that she doesn't directly, you know, have any hots for a guy, and it's always been...
I don't know. It seems like at the end they were vibing.
They were, but yeah. It's just, I mean, that's for a long time. It's been like the argument about Velma because she, and I would say that if anything, and I hate this, but it's kind of right. Like the new designation of like, you know, somebody who's not asexual or whatever, doesn't really care. Yeah. You know, like she probably fits that better, honestly, with her depictions because she's just all about her like hyper focus on the mystery and all the other stuff is just to the wayside. She might be attracted to guys, but it's such a like a bottom level thing that it's not even a factor for her.
I think Velma got down with Bo for sure because he was very excited to hear about her mystery. He wants to be a book writer.
That could work.
He wants
work
to write mysteries, and she works at a shop where she sells mystery books. They're gonna fuck. Not only that, but Velma absolutely fucked Sam Winchester.
She did do that.
She did. Okay. Velma gets down. Velma, it like I said, it's always the quiet ones. I bet you she's way better in bed than Daphne. I hate to say it. Daphne, no offense.
Also, I will say this. Well, and you can imagine she's the freak, so yeah. She's going to, you know, be more likely to give you the good, you know, the good sex or whatever. But I'm pretty sure as I was looking through this, because I didn't include it, that Fred Welker, when I said that he played Fred in about everything, that does include Scooby Natural, that he was the voice of Fred in.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah. I hear no difference with Fred ever.
Yeah.
Although I don't remember how, what's his name sounded as Fred. Freddie Prinze Jr.
Oh, well, Freddie Prinze Jr. is not a very good actor. So.
Okay, woof.
Yeah. There was a belated sequel called Scooby-Doo Return to Zombie Island from 2019, which, unlike this film, received mostly negative reviews. It has been called by fans total garbage and an absolute insult to this film.
I almost feel like we need to watch it just to give our take on that.
I've heard it's got a lot of CGI type stuff in okay. it, too, so... the Moat Monster's counterfeiting scheme at the beginning of the movie is vaguely reminiscent of the scheme in a bicycle built for Boo from 1998. Or
88,
from 1988, yeah.
Okay.
Then current series character Scrappy-Doo was considered for the movie, but was rejected in favor of return of series characters Fred, Daphne, and Velma.
Oh, thank the Lord. If you had told me Scrappy was in this, I'd be like, no, we are not reviewing this.
That's one of my favorite things about his character being in the live action movies is because they make him the villain.
Good. You know?
So that's great. Mark Hamill played the regular character Corey Anders on Genie, reprising the role in the crossover mystery in Persia. He also has other notable Scooby-verse guest roles since. So okay. He's actually been doing the voice for Scooby-Doo associated stuff since the early 70s.
Nice.
Dave Coulier auditioned for the voice of Scooby-Doo.
I wonder why he didn't get it. He's been doing Scooby forever, like on Full House.
Full House, he was doing it all the time. Yeah. So it would not, I don't know why he didn't get, to be honest for you, with you.
Maybe he didn't like the pay, or he thought he should get more, and they were like, nah.
All I can say is he ought to know.
He ought to know. Yep.
Velma becoming a bookstore owner following the dissolution of Mystery Inc. is a reference to Ray Stantz owning a bookstore following the dissolution of the Ghostbusters, as shown at the beginning of Ghostbusters 2.
The two nerds. I bet you Ray got down in Funky Town as well, too. I bet you he was a big old freak.
Well, I mean, he was into all the occult stuff, so, I mean...
Willing to please, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a few books out there about the power of sex magic. I know that Anton LaVey was into that sort of thing.
Oh, shit.
The voice recording sessions were the last to be done at Hanna-Barbera Studios before it permanently closed down in December of 97.
Damn.
This was the movie released by Warner Brothers, one of the first Scoobies released by Warner Bros.
That's wild.
In the previous series, Daphne was known as danger-prone Daphne due to constantly being kidnapped. When a zombie reaches for Daphne, she flips him over, indicating she learned some self-defense. Subsequent films and series would follow suit in order to move the character beyond the stereotypical damsel in distress. I like the fact that she can defend herself, but the one thing that bothers me when I think of this is I feel like this is the intro to the girl boss era that we're in right now, where it's like, you know, a woman can't show any weakness. It's like, you know... and it can't even be assisted by a man in a lot of cases. It's like, oh, she's got to be boss bitch at all times and kick everybody's ass, even guys that are twice her size and twice as skilled. It's like, you hear what you're saying, right? That's kind of stupid.
Well, you know, the two other women in the movie, or the werecats, if you will, got her tied up, so...
But that's another woman.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's not that. I'm just saying that, like, it. Obviously, they still had scenes in this where, you know, Fred was helping and all that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying you can see the progression to the girl boss era as we're getting, you know, toward it. During the it's terror time again scene, Shaggy accepts a vine from a zombie to pull Scooby out of some quicksand. It seems like a classic double take gag. It's actually foreshadowing that the zombies don't mean them any harm.
Yeah, and you don't realize it till the end.
Yeah, Simone, Lenore, and the other werecats are the only Scooby-Doo villains to perish, although certain villains in Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost from 99 and Scooby-Doo and the Cyber Chase meet ambiguous fates. I didn't realize that Scooby-Doo and Witch's Ghost came out in 99. That had, like I said, has more threat to it than this.
Okay.
I don't know why, you know, they didn't do that. But Simone mentions that the zombies get more restless once night falls. During the daytime, only Morgan Moonscar shows up. During the nighttime, a Confederate colonel and a horde of zombies shows up. It's also a hint that the cat creature's ritual only happens at night, as that's when the living dead need, or the living need the zombies' protection from being sacrificed.
Yeah.
Adrienne Barbeau was the voice of Catwoman in Batman in the Batman cartoons. In this film, she plays a Catwoman of another sort. Several hints linking to the nature of the zombies. They generally don't try to physically harm the gang, and one of them even helps, you know, Shaggy save Scooby in the chase sequence, as we've said. In the post-credits scene, Scooby feeds the cat some milk, so he is nice to him after everything's said and done. And the film's lead villain, Simone Lenore, who becomes a cat creature, is named after the actress Simone Simon, who starred in Cat People from 1942, a woman who transforms into a panther when her anger is aroused and when other things are aroused.
Oh, okay. Wow.
That's kind of neat, though, that they went back and named it after that movie, though, considering, you know, what it's about and everything. Pretty good link. Out of all the direct-to-video movies, this is arguably, I guess it didn't come out in theaters then in that case, but I saw the movie theater information, so I don't know how accurate that is.
Okay.
But this is arguably the darkest and most frightening out of them all. I don't agree with that. The others were toned down at the request of the studio. Also, only one where the characters are killed, three on screen and dozens off.
Yeah.
That part is true, but I don't think it's the darkest and most frightening of the ones that they released.
And it's really in the back of the story. It's not something that they make a primary part of the story, so you're not like, oh my God, these are dead people. You don't associate them with that until you see one of the zombies wearing, like, beachwear and, like, they have, like, you know, their tourist stuff on still.
Yeah, one of the more modern ones, because the ones from the, like, you know, the Confederates and all that, they would have been dead anyway. So
exactly.
It's not like, you know.
Yeah, but like you kind of just, you don't really associate them as people. You're like, oh my God, these are zombies. Well, yes, zombies used to be people. You kind of really don't think about that right off the bat, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you don't think about that in zombie movies, really. I mean, they're monsters, but you don't think about them being previously.
Exactly.
I mean, unless they're one of our heroes that has turned, you know, like Flyboy, for instance, you know.
That, or if you're one of those people like, but they're human beings, and then they get eaten.
Yeah, those people are going to be the death of us all. After being fired from their latest job, Shaggy and Scooby fear going hungry and turning to skin and bones.
Oh.
That's actually foreshadowing of what happens to them near the end of the movie whenever they get their lives drained out of them for a bit. Before boarding Jacques' ferry, Lena tells the gang it only runs during the day. The ferry and Jacques show up again at night just seconds before the reveal that he, like the Simone and Lena, is also a werecat of a kind.
Yeah.
Lena's absence during the scene where Velma floats in the air was with no force and no way to be pulled down physically foreshadows the presence of the voodoo dolls,
oh, yeah,
as well as Simone and Lena's true nature.
Okay, that makes sense.
While the revelation that the ladies were humanoid cats was a major twist in the plot, there are several events early in the film that hint at this. Lena's eyes glow when she shows Fred to his room, similar to that of a cat, and also Simone being depicted as a cat lover.
Okay, I didn't even think about that.
Similarities with live-action film Scooby-Doo include being more mature take on the franchise, the gang being depicted as adults rather than teenagers, the opening scene being the conclusion of a traditional Mystery Inc. adventure, them separating for a time before they get back together, and then the gang is invited to an island for nefarious purposes. The gang encounters real supernatural creatures for the first time. The villain is someone the gang thought they could trust in both instances, and the villain uses a ritual that must be completed by a certain time. That's kind of, I mean, when you put it together like that, that's kind of like, okay, James Gunn.
Yeah.
You did a good job with the movie, but yeah, it looks like you took some notes, just saying. and finally, additionally, Scott Ince's voices Scooby in this film and Scrappy in the live action film. So there's that link between the two of them. Hmm. Closing thoughts. I'm going to go first, just get out of the way. This at best is a 2.5 out of 5. I mean, I almost want to give it a 2 just for the lack of scares. It's good in concept. Mm-hmm. I like the idea that they're made with real monsters, and I love the look of the zombies. But it's not about the zombies. Yeah. It's like a bait and switch.
It is.
And the werecat angle interests me at none at all. Like, just it doesn't.
Yeah, I think the amount of eye rolls I had while watching this film was not good.
I just thought about something. I mean, what would be even cooler is if the main two villainesses, as it were like necromancers of some kind. They actually controlled the zombies.
Would have been way cooler, and you still could tie that into Louisiana culture as well.
You could control it, or you could fit it in. It would work, and it would make them still very evil, because even if they were originally attacked by Moonscar, they have later on, you know, and basically enslaved all these people to just do their you know, to help them keep living, as it were, or whatever their, you know, goal is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that would have been a cooler tie-in myself.
Yeah, this is also a 2 and 2.5 at best for me. Somewhere between a 2 and a 2.5, because it was, like I said, I will give the credit that this came from a different era, although we just discovered that a year later, there was another Scooby movie that had way more scares to it, and that's upsetting, because, again, this was their first opportunity. They blew it. And not only did they blow it with the fear factor, they blew it with the zombies that are supposed to be the forefront of this movie.
Yeah. It's not only are we going to minimize how much screen time the zombies actually have, we're also going to make them as non-threatening as humanly possible.
Yeah.
Outside of the one scene where, like you said, they were both in the van, you know, and then they get surrounded. That was really only
the time it was scary. And it was, I think it was a good scene when they accidentally fell into that ditch and the bones start coming out.
That was good.
That was a good scene. Yeah. So, but you know, like I said, watching this, there was a lot more eye rolls. Usually a Scooby show doesn't get that from me. Usually I'm getting more laughs in a Scooby, you know, or little chuckles or something. And I rarely had that. I mean, Scabby really had that going on for me. You know, they're the ones who brought the chuckles, which they usually do. But even then, it didn't feel as genuine as other Scooby films that I've watched. So, yeah, I really wasn't feeling this one. I wanted to. It got too complicated at the end. There was too much going on. When they finally brought the zombies, I'm like, awesome, here's the zombies. But then we don't learn a lot about them, because it has to tie into these two werecats. And I'm like, oh, great. Now we got some weird fucking curse going on. But the curse, although it ties to the zombies aren't cursed. I guess they are kind of in a way because of the werecats. But it's not that they're cursed. They're trying to get their revenge.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like who... It's one group's getting revenge on the other group that's getting revenge back on the original group. It's like, it's so convoluted at a certain point.
It's like the Spider-Man meme where the three Spider-Men are pointing to each other.
And you could have had the scene that they, you know, maybe not with Moonscar, because we both agree that that's weird that you take somebody who was a graper amongst other things and like kind of make him the, you know, like, oh, it's so nice that he gets to go off to the afterlife. Like, really? Okay, whatever. But if you'd had them be like, controlling the zombies, you know, through some kind of idol or something like that, And then the idol got broken and the zombies turned on them. First, you get their comeuppance.
Yes.
Secondly, you get the zombies getting the revenge. And then whenever the zombies can finally lay down to rest, then you get that, you know, that final scene that they put in the movie anyways, with the zombies finally being able to move on to the afterlife. You get all of that, and it's nowhere near as convoluted as what they did in this movie.
Yeah. I don't know. Very disappointing that, like I said, they blew their opportunity.
And don't get us started on the whole, it's like you're nitpicking a kid's, we're nitpicking the, I mean, we don't have a problem with the concept of it being, you know, made for kids.
Yeah.
We have already admitted, we gushed about, Coraline like nobody's business. That was intelligent. It didn't treat its audience, you know, it didn't shy away from the scares either. I mean, honestly, Coraline didn't, because when you think about what the implications for what's going on in that movie, it's a dark fucking movie. I mean, it really is. I just feel like that they didn't serve their, they thought a little too much about the plot and made it a little too much for what the movie needed.
And if you think about the original Scoobies, there was always an underlying message of sometimes the people you trust aren't who they say they are, or maybe they're not as trustworthy. And that was always something in Scooby-Doo, like, you know, the people were the monsters.
That's the common takeaway from any of the original Scooby-Doos, is that the people really were the monsters.
In this particular case, they were actually monsters. And this was supposed to be the one, oh my God, okay, like finally, we're finally going to get scary, scary monsters. And we didn't. And I respect that they were trying to keep it, you know, simmered for the children, because, again, Karens have existed for eons now. You know, and Karens were letter writers back in the day. I'm not sure if they're email writers now, or they'll go on and make a post on fucking social media.
They're social media. Let's dog you into oblivion now. I mean, they go that route. It's like, we're going to get on here and we're going to, you know, cancel culture you to death.
Exactly.
What Karens do now, which they did back in the day, too, because we discussed it. Silent Night, Deadly Night. That was the 80s version of cancel culture, if I ever saw it. One week in the theaters. And the Karens all came out and they got that shit shut down before it could even start. I mean.
Yeah. So I know that they're trying to prevent that. I just think that allowing that to hinder their, you know, film in general, the results are not great.
If they would have just, I mean, they didn't have to have actual, you know, like darkness in the movie. They didn't have to have any of the Scoobies get hurt. I mean, just to have the threat of it is what, you know, kids typically, because kids will paint the images in their mind. Like if you give them the threat and then, you know, even do like a cutaway scene, the kid's freaking out because their mind is already made up what happened in the next scene. And it's way worse than you could probably even show them. I mean, that's just how kids are with their imaginations. If you would have put that in there and just let the mind kind of wander, you know, a bit, fill in the gaps without, like, you know, without downplaying everything at the last possible second.
Yeah.
That would have edged it over to where it would have been decent, you know, in that aspect.
It could have, yeah. I mean, they would have, it feels like they would have had to done a lot to salvage this movie. To make it, I am genuinely surprised it made as much. I'm glad it made as much as it did, considering its budget, too.
I think it was the, it was just the aspect of it that was new. Like the fact that this is the first time the Scoobies legitimately, even though it technically wasn't, but nobody hardly remembers those things that I mentioned.
No,
you know?
I had not heard of them.
But they knew this because they made a big deal out of it. They're like, this time there's real zombies. Like, we're throwing them in there, folks.
Yeah.
And so they got a lot of eyes on the project because of that. People are like, hey, I grew up with Scooby-Doo, and I always hoped that at least one of those creatures would be a monster, and they never were. I'm going to go watch this. That's what they literally sold this on.
Yeah. You know? In case this is the first time listening or the only time you're going to listen to the show, I don't like to refer to the Reverend and I as critics, because we don't want to criticize a movie. Critics, I feel like that's the full term of it. We're going to criticize.
Yeah, they'll take something and totally nitpick apart. It's like, well, I really love this movie, but it had this, this, and this, so therefore, it you know, it's going to have to be a mid-grade at best. It's like, no, if you enjoyed the movie, enjoy the movie. I mean, you know.
I've had to point out many times on our YouTube channel that we are Death Holler Podcast, and movie reviews. And I point out the movie reviews because that's exactly what we're doing. We're reviewing a movie. We watched a movie, and then we're telling you whether we liked it or not and how we felt about it. So this is exactly what this is. Not criticizing the movie. It's just not something that we thoroughly enjoyed as much as other cartoons that we have reviewed. So it just didn't get it for me. It sounds like it didn't get it for Reverend. I am surprised. I really thought you really liked this. Like, I thought you were going to be giving this at least a 3 to 3.5. You know, I wasn't expecting this to go into the 4 territory.
It was the letdown of the zombies themselves. Yes. Because the movie sold on that, and then what you get in the movie, it's like if there's not even. I mean, they're like we've said, and I'm just beating it to death. They're barely in it. Like it's a bait and switch. It's the Werecat movie. It's really what it is.
It's hard not to bring that point home because I think that's the one thing we were really really looking forward to. You know, especially during zombie season of Death Holler.
And the fact that they did such a good job with the animation of the zombies, like those zombies look so fucking cool.
They look so good, you know.
And then they ruin it with, you know, by making them, you know, we're friendly zombies. It's like, come on, man. I mean, seriously, you know. But
any worse than a zombie that sings "Oh Baby Baby" by Britney Spears?
That's kind of funny. Or a zombie stripper that somehow still has the coordination to be able to walk in those high heels and do a lap dance before, you know, finally revealing,
hey,
you know, that they...
Land of the Dead. They were all just wanting to get back to what they know, okay?
But, yeah, it's... I'm sorry, anybody liked this movie? I mean, I'm sure there's nostalgia for people who were much younger when they watched this. Yes. I would have been a teenager. I might have seen this once whenever I was in high school. I don't really remember it that much, and that should say something. But I always liked the concept of it. But, again, that's why it disappoints me because it doesn't live up to the concept that they give you in the title even. Not even if you – I mean, I don't know how they advertised it. I've not looked at the trailer for it, but just the title – sells you something that you don't really get.
I think at 16, La Llorona would have really loved this movie. I think I would have given it a higher score back then if that's what I was doing. I would have watched it. I would have enjoyed it. I would have been like, oh shit, there's fucking zombies. I would have totally bypassed a storyline. Again, that's the one thing that's hard about watching movies and reviewing them is that you kind of do unintentionally become a critic. You know? And so it's hard.
If you're watching them with a view for, like, the critical side of it.
Yeah, yes, and I wasn't. I was genuinely watching this for enjoyment again. Was at work. I popped it on. I, you know, kind of to keep me busy. I didn't have a lot to do that day. And so this was kind of getting me through the day. I was looking for enjoyment. And unfortunately, what I got was annoyance more than anything. And not understanding, like, what... Did I miss something? And now that I am here talking about this, I didn't miss anything. It's exactly, you have the same thoughts as I do.
And I'll even admit, I was laughing at the dad jokes that Shaggy was telling. I know you groaned at them, but I was laughing at them. I mean, like, I enjoyed that.
I didn't groan at them. I didn't think they were, but it was one of those wife that's heard this enough time kind of eye groans, or, like, oh, you fucking, but it was the only thing that kept the momentum going of this movie.
It was, yeah. I mean, and I was enjoying that. I was enjoying seeing the scenes that we, you know, all kind of, you know, thought was going on, but they kind of cemented this with between the, have they been together between Fred and Daphne? I like the interaction
tension.
The sexual tension. But then, like, you know, but the actual, you know, pull of the movie was just not there.
It wasn't. No, it's funny that we agree so much on this. I know we've had listeners be like, you guys need to disagree more. It's hard to disagree more when the points, when the movie is not giving us anything to disagree. There's nothing I could argue with Reverend about on this and be like, you're wrong. This was actually really good, or because of this, or anything like that. Or actually, it's way worse than what you put it because of this. I don't. I'm so mid on this because it sucks that it's the nostalgia of Scooby-Doo. You know, you got the scabby fucking jokes going on, and I don't know. But then you have the missing plot points that were supposed to be the biggest points of the film, we're just too level on this, and I hate to disappoint anyone that wants us to fucking fight over this. I don't have anything to fight about.
Yeah, I mean, I it's not a situation like Pearl where, you know, or let's take it back even more, House of the Devil. Slow as fuck to you, couldn't be bothered with it. And, like, you know, I love that movie. It's like the slow buildup. I mean, well, there's nothing to fight about in this. It's the same exact thing. And that's kind of the sad point about it. It's either not bad enough to be argumentative over about how bad it is, or good enough to be arguing about that. It's Mm-mm. just mid.
It's like, mid.
We might disagree
as the
on
kids
like,
would say.
We might disagree on what elements are good or bad in the movie, but even with that, generally we're on the same boat with that. It's like great visuals. I mean, well-designed, you know, monsters, good voice acting, story, and music just didn't really help Mm-mm. the movie out.
It didn't.
And you need both. I mean, you got to have both to have a well-rounded movie.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I mean, where we're going to fall with it. I mean, I hate that because I went into this thinking, oh, yeah, we're going to get this cool, or we're finally going to get to review this. And I've been wanting to have a reason to go back and watch this forever. And when I did, I'm like, okay.
You're like, I hope she likes it. Wait, did you think I was going to like it? What did you think I was going
to
think?
I thought you were going to think it was mid. I did not even entertain the idea that you might like this movie.
I really want to know. In fact, I wonder if she would answer us, but I want to know what Daphne thinks about it.
Yeah, I don't know if you can get that answer from her quick enough for the podcast or not, but I mean, that would be interesting to know.
Yeah. I don't think we can. We're about to end the podcast, but if we do get that answer, maybe it's something we could discuss in a future episode. But yeah, I'm curious to know if she liked it, if she had that Scooby nostalgia, because, you know, we have our stupid little Scooby gang we call ourselves. We have a Fred, we got a Velma, we got a Scooby, we got a Daphne. Not a Scooby, we don't have a Scooby.
We don't have a Scooby.
We got a Shaggy. We got a Scooby if we throw Lord Vader into the mix, but he doesn't want to be a part of the gang.
I don't know. That's the best I can do with it. And I mean, I'm ready to wrap it up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of sad that it didn't, you know, really spark anything more than that.
Yeah. We tried. We really did.
All right, folks. With that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit. Scooby dooby doo. Where are you? Where are you?